Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Ricardo. I'm very happy to be here at this meeting and to give a short presentation about vertical farming and in particular how we can control the growth of the plants. This morning there were already several presentations about the history of greenhouse and vertical farm, so I will not do that again, but just a little bit from perspective in Europe or the Netherlands. If I look at the history 100 years ago, I could have made this picture. This is probably more related to the year that I was born than the greenhouse in the Netherlands looked like this. This I could call already a modern greenhouse, though I must admit this picture was taken around the year 2000, so yeah, everything is relative how modern it is. What you see in all those things is that the level of technology increase and the level of technology increases such that we can have a further control of the production process. And if you consider in that way, then maybe going to these systems, what you see here, a vertical farm or an indoor farm, plants grown only, not using solar light, I should say, only artificial light. It's an ultimate level of control, of a full control over the production process. And if you look at those vertical farms or indoor farms or plant factories with artificial light, just how you would like to call them, you can find these type of warehouse systems, large-scale production systems. You see also quite often what I call container farm. They grow plants in a small container. You see them now also popping up in supermarkets, sometimes even in restaurants. And this is an example of a supermarket in Berlin, a company Infarm, who provides that. Or you see a lot of these type of small things that people can have in their own home. Just to give you a little bit of the wide scale of indoor growing of plants. And the investment in this whole sector is fabulous. It's amazing that also in the last few weeks, I should say, we heard about 100 million euro here in the States, in Germany. It's amazing. Well, and then we can debate about what the economies will be, but I will not discuss today about economies. I will focus on the plants. Although vertical farming, we heard also this morning, started before there was the LEDs, but I think LEDs is one of the things that makes vertical farming better possible. The most important thing is this full control of the production. You don't need much land area. On a small area, you can have a high rate of production, and in particular, the more layers you do, the higher the yield could be. But in general, what you see, and of course depends on the conditions that you choose, on one layer you can already grow much more than in the open field on an annual basis. Well, consider then how high you could go. And it can be anywhere. I'm coming from the Netherlands, a very relatively mild climate, so there the need for vertical farming is probably not so high. If you would go much more to the north, it's getting cooler, it's getting darker in winter, or if you go to the south, and I've experienced now the climate of Las Vegas, for me it's extremely hot, 40 degrees centigrade, and I'm wondering, oh, how can you grow plants at those high temperatures? Probably the more extreme the climate is, the more advantage of a vertical farm you might expect. Because it is, to a large extent, not dependent on the outdoor environment. Sustainability, I will say a little bit more on a number of aspects. It can be very sustainable, but still it needs a lot of electricity. Really a lot. What I think is very important ideas that we can give guarantees. Guarantees on that we produce so many kilograms on a specific day, but more and more it's not just about the kilograms, also that we can specify it is about this type of quality. What about the cost? It's hard to say what the costs exactly are. I usually compare it to a rough calculation for a Dutch situation where I compare it to greenhouses, to the glass houses. In the Netherlands it's rather efficient. I think still the cost price of a vertical farm at this moment is probably 2 to 3 times higher. If I talk then to a Dutch grower, then they usually say, oh, 2 to 3 times more expensive, so that will never be any business. Well, it shows it will not work at this moment for a bulk product. It needs to be a different product, or it needs to be added value, a better product, or a whole market, a specific market segment where it could work. But this is what you have to realize, it's still an expensive system. So you need to sell, you make products which can be sold for a higher price. This is a general introduction. I would like to give you just a few examples of how we can control the growth of the plants, but because I have only limited time, I can only give you a few general examples. In fact, this is more, well, probably a bit like a classical textbook it could be. What you see here is we grew tomato plants under red and blue, a mixture of red-blue LEDs, and then we added far red. Completely at the left-hand side, there is no far red. If you go from left to right, a higher intensity of far red. So far red, not photosynthetically active, although we can also debate what its role is in photosynthesis. The major effect here of the far red is on the elongation. You see more extension of the stem, more expansion of the leaves, and that expansion of the leaves, in this, in particular in relatively small plants, if you get more expansion of the leaves, the plants intercept more light, and that makes that on a plant as a whole, you get more photosynthesis and therefore growth. So in particular, in relatively young plants, we see in most crops a rapid increase in the growth rate of the plants, but usually also taller. And for some crops, you don't want to have those elongated plants. Sometimes you want very compact plants. Also, maybe not surprising, what you see on the right-hand side, that is where it says end of the day, because that is the usual term that we use, but a better term would have been start of the night or start of the dark period, where we gave for 15 minutes 10 micromole of far-red. So short period, low light intensity, usually has already a tremendous effect. Compare here the complete right-hand side with the reference treatment on the left-hand side. So with just a little bit of far-red light, at the end of the day, that's the period that the plants are very sensitive to far-red. So this is an example of tomato. You could do the same with lettuce, and it works in most species, though that the magnitude of the response is dependent on the species, but also dependent on the cultivar. Also here in lettuce, initially you see a very rapid increase in the growth rate, mainly due to expansion of the leaf area, therefore more light interception. And then, interestingly, if we do it with tomato plants, when we go up to the fruiting stage, and that's, I think, the stage where there has been not that much work so far, but there are popping up now at the moment many publications about far-red. We see that the partitioning of the assimilates, so the distribution of the assimilates among the different organs, is affected by far-red, and in this case in favor of the fruits. So what we see on the left bar is the fraction that there was leaves, 53%, 22% stem, 25% fruit. So please focus here on the red part. So 25 in the reference, we had 25% of all the dry mass of the plant was on the fruits. If you added the far red, that 25% went up to 38. This is still a relatively young tomato crop, because otherwise those percentages for the fruits would be much higher. If you do it for a whole year, the fraction to the fruits goes up to about 70%. That is without a far red. If we then add a far red, we see that it goes up to about 75%. Well, then the question is, do we have sufficient leaves? Yes, in these plants like tomato, usually we have sufficient leaves. So we could use a little bit less leaves. And then it is very beneficial that the assimilates are partitioned more towards the fruits. So far, that were a few general examples of far red. Of course, with blue, a lot is known also about blue light. What you generally see, if the diffraction of blue light increases, plants are getting more compact. That's what you see from the left to the right. I have to make a small remark where it says 0% blue. I must say the reference here is white light. Well, in white light there is between 25 and 30% is blue. So 0% blue means that was all white light. On the right hand side, 50% of the white light was replaced by blue. So making that it was about 60 to 65% blue in a total spectrum. This is typically what you see with more blue light, more compact plants. If you would measure the rate of photosynthesis at the leaf level, quite often you see that the rate of photosynthesis is higher, or at least the maximum rate of photosynthesis is higher under more blue light. But the total growth rate is often reduced due to the effects on the morphology of the plants. So here you have also another color to play around with what shape of the plants you would like to have. So far, a few things about growth. Probably even more interesting is, what about quality? Three different lattices, three different light environments in this case. What do you think that the different lights are here? Different colors? Well, could be, but here were different light intensities. On the left-hand side, a high light intensity, 500 micromole, the right-hand side, a very low. So you can see the plants look very different. Then we also study the post-harvest. What happens then? 13 days after harvest, and I hope you can see it on the screen, at a low light intensity, the decay started much earlier than the plants grown at a high light intensity. And here also, after 20 days of harvest, well, what you see at the lower side, at the right-hand side, well, those type of leaves, you would not like to come too close because it was not smelling very nice. So what you see here, also, the growth conditions are very important for the post-harvest life. In particular, light intensity, and you can also, well, many opportunities with respect to the spectrum. Well, and if it is about quality, it's about how it looks like, what the shelf life is, how it tastes, or health-promoting compounds. In particular, with vitamin C, but also we see it often in other antioxidants. Usually, the more light there is, the more vitamin C. This is an example of tomato fruits where the light was really focused towards the fruits on the plant. Similar type of responses we see in leafy vegetables. I only chose to show here a few results about light. That's where we can do a lot. But it should always be in balance between all the other growth factors. If you change the light and if you want to have an optimal production, you have to change the temperature as well. It needs to be balanced. Pay attention to the CO2. I see often huge investments in the light and then they don't have CO2 supply. I can't understand it. Air humidity, the airflow, and what about the roots, the water supply, the nutrient supply? It doesn't make sense just to optimize one factor. It needs to be balanced. Do I still have a few minutes, Ricardo? Yeah, okay, then two more. Then I can say a little bit about sustainability. We always hear we can do it without pesticides. I really think it is possible, but we need an ultimate level of hygiene, and that's not easy. And then still continuously a very strict monitoring, because then we need a very early action once things go wrong, because otherwise it could also go wrong in a very bad way. We can reuse the nutrients. Well, for the greenhouse in the Netherlands, we also do that already. So it is already, for me, common practice. Reusing all the nutrients, so no drainage, so we have very little use. Very little water use. If we grow tomato plants, for instance, or let's in the Mediterranean, in the open field, and we use already quite a high level of technology, we need at least 60 liters of water to produce 1 kilogram of tomato. In a modern greenhouse in the Netherlands, a grower on average uses about 17 liters of water per kilogram tomato. So where's most of the water going to? Well, that's taken up by the plant and being transpired. So if you do that type of system in a vertical farm and we would regain the transpired water, we can go down to as low as a few liters of water per kilogram of tomato. Looking around here in this region, how dry it is, well, I can imagine that this is here quite relevant. Extremely limited land use. Well, how relevant it is, that depends also on where are you on the world. It can be very nearby cities. And if you do so if you do it very nearby the consumers, then there is less transport. And if it is more nearby the consumers, if you also make a product with a longer shelf life, it should be possible to have less food waste. So these are all quite positive with respect to sustainability, energy use. There's a tremendous use of electricity. So that's what we have to work on. A few other advantages. I mentioned already earlier that we can do a guarantee on what to produce, that we can make a product which has more health-promoting compounds. Still, it's an expensive one, so it should also fit with the whole marketing concept. And then I would like to conclude. Vertical farm, it makes it possible that we have a full control over the production process. Sustainability, in general, many positive aspects. Energy reduction is still a very urgent issue. And before I conclude, I would like to make some advertisements for the workshop that we organize in Wageningen in October about vertical farming, so 13 to 15 October. So if you are interested, look for a Verti Farm or contact me, and then I would like to thank you for your attention.